The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
To this week's Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show with Nathan Ross, and I believe we've got my associate Dan DuBose on the line already. Dan, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning, Houston.
Yes, very good, and I presume you've got coffee in hand, so you're in good shape.
Yeah.
It's always good to see another day, correct? Even in Houston. Today is our Syndication Math Show, where we try to focus exclusively on syndicated real estate private partnership investments, typically involving multifamily opportunities. We do let some tax math slip into the mix occasionally, because the best way to approach syndications involves the use of retirement money, or one of the best ways. Probably is the best way if you're trying to catch up on your retirement wealth or your ability to enjoy a certain lifestyle as you get to retirement. And, you know, we certainly like the real estate private partnership syndication asset class for that purpose. And I don't know of anything. In fact, I'd love to hear if you've got a way to generate wealth faster, more consistently, and, you know, obviously at above average rates of return. We'd love to hear it. So if you want to connect with us during the show today, the best way to do that is send a text to 713 area code 581-0195, and I'll keep an eye out for any questions or suggestions or whatever you might care to offer. Dan, as we normally do, let's get the disclaimer out of the way and remind people that just because they hear us on the air today or prior weeks, if you go back to the podcast archives there at kscvradio.com, that this is not a DIY-type show. It involves the use of professionals, whether they're your existing professionals, or perhaps you don't have existing professionals that understand this particular type of tax accounting, etc. We would be happy to consider working with you if you would go to our website at baplanner.com. That's B-E-A P-L-A-N-N-E-R, baplanner.com. And if you'll fill out the intake forms there at the top right, and then schedule a call, link right next to it, we'll be happy to get on the phone with you. And we'll even be happy to do an illustration of the only four ways you can access your retirement funds, be it a 401k at the office or an IRA, to control those funds to invest them in real estate and do whatever makes you happy after that point. Either continue working, or if you're at a point of being able to live off of your real estate and your retirement funds, do whatever makes you happy. Again, that's the website is baplanner.com. Dan, let's pivot at this point, and I think we'll talk about in general real estate syndications. I know we start every week's show as if people are already in the know and understand what a real estate private partnership syndication is. And I know that's, as I reflect, because I see questions that come in later, they did not have the background or the foundational knowledge base that you really need to. And so let's talk for a minute at an intro or introductory level of what is real estate syndication. And I guess before we even get that far, it seems like most people, when you talk to friends and associates, relatives, whatever, you mention investing in real estate and they instantly come up with the concept of buying a rental home and all of the issues attendant with being a landlord. And even when you have professional property manager in a professional property manager in place, the thought is, hey, that takes a ton of work managing those properties, fixing them, maintaining them, collecting rents, doing evictions, all the things. For those of us that have our own single family, we understand it's not all, buttercups and daisies or whatever that expression is. It's been a while since I've heard it. There's some real work involved, typically. I hear a lot of folks on the radio talk about how it's so hands-off and, you know, best product, best price, and, you know, by God, if your experience isn't just pristine, you did something wrong. That's what you'll hear. You'll never hear anything about, well, you know, we forgot to tell you about the need to not just have enough money to buy a home, but having reserves available if you have to go in and fix it. And, you know, I know, having bought and sold over 150 properties back in the day, there are so many things that go wrong. The concept of having a tenant is almost secondary to having a tenant that doesn't destroy your house and that will leave. Just, you know, leave when you finally realize how bad off it is. You don't care to evict them. You just want them out of the house so you can get another tenant in. And, of course, in the meantime, you're going to have things that need to be fixed. And it's just constant. It's ongoing. And so, you know, what we focus on this show is not the single-family rental market, although we have clients, many clients, that own single-family rentals. We think it's a great learning process. It's a needless learning process, quite frankly, if you decide you're going to go into the private partnership crowdfunding asset class, because there, unless you are going to be the syndicator, the sponsor, the lead partner, whatever term you want to use for the folks that are guiding the transaction, you're not going to have to get out of bed in the morning. You know, someone else is doing that. You theoretically are going to sit back and wait for checks once a quarter, once a year, however often that project has forecasted distributing cash flows. And Dan, I'm curious, have you ever owned a piece of rental real estate other than in the apartment game? Any single family homes? Or
I've never owned any single family homes, always in a multifamily.
Yeah, you were a very wise man, even at a younger age, correct? So, in any event, well, I don't do single family anymore. And I think if you have the funds to get started in multifamily, and I'm going to say by that minimum of $100,000, that's where I suggest you focus, because having some young people that are willing to get out of bed every morning and go fight the battles of dealing with all of the above, there's something to be said for that. Not to mention, you don't have to provide the loan. You don't have to sign up for the loan. You don't have to find the property. You don't have to execute the day-to-day. You are a passive investor, and as a passive investor, you're simply looking to receive the fruits of the investment. And you hope there are fruits. There's obviously no guarantees, but show me another asset class. I'll keep saying it. Show me another asset class that comes close to the returns, and you know, all on a passive platform, as opposed to you having to be active. It's quite a difference. But In any event, as I say, the single family market does typically include some heavy lifting, whereas the group investment concept of real estate syndications, crowdfunding as it were, allow us to get all the benefits of real estate investing with none of the hassles of being a landlord. And so, you know, that's essentially what we focus on. Dan, did you have anything to that discussion you wanted to add before we talk about the concept of group investing a little bit further?
You know, the cash flow you allude to or talked about a little bit is probably the reason you do get into the multifamily, because it's you're going to have a typically, I mean, you're going to read your memorandum, you're going to read your PPM and find whether or not that operator's reliable, has he done what he's projected he's going to do or gotten close to. Has he run off with the money? You know, you want to know that too. Sometimes we have seen that happen. You know, that's the worst of events, of course, but you know, you got to follow, you want to know that cash flow's out there. That's one of the most important reasons for putting your $100,000 in that deal.
Well, you definitely want to make sure they've been to the finish line. I applaud the newbie first-time syndicator. Might even invest with them. Depends on their history otherwise in terms of what they did for a living or what they're still doing for a living. And personality-wise, they appear to be someone that's been shot at before, you know, had some hard times. I mean, there's a number of reasons why I might still invest with a newbie, but in any event, we like people that have been to the finish line. We understand it's going to cost us more in fees, but it also has perhaps a better chance of delivering the goods. We're going to skip. I know we're past the point for a break. I think we'll skip the break today and look at doing it at the half hour mark. But in any event, Dan, the beauty about crowdfunding, as I see it, or let's call it group investments, is that you've got a group of like-minded people typically that understand what investing in passive multifamily investments are. And, you know, it's the leverage that you achieve effectively. I mean, I know it's capital, it's not debt, but that's a pretty powerful concept. And I'll give credit to the Obama administration. I believe that's where the crowdfunding statute first originated. Been updated significantly since. It's been liberalized to allow more types of investors. It's not just the millionaires or multimillionaires, the accredited class. We also have opportunities for non-accredited investors. And even though, even as we speak, you know, the Build Back Better Act was trying to take some of that back, at least on the non, or on, well, I guess on both fronts, accredited and non-accredited, didn't pass, thankfully, but there are ongoing efforts to pass assorted pieces of the tax code that were embodied therein. So we'll keep an eye on that. But in any event, Dan, I interrupted you. I don't know if you remember where you were at, but I was trying to make it clear as to that point.
No, go ahead.
Well, I think that, you know, one thing that's telling, and I know until I joined a real estate mentor group, by the way, that's my 9-pound Rottweiler, otherwise known as, or actually 7-pound Rottweiler, otherwise known as a Pomeranian, that is sitting here at my side watching over the family office here. But in any event, when you walk or when you drive around, it's amazing to me how many apartments that I noticed that I didn't used to notice. And once you understand this asset class and the ability to make money with these assets, you really start thinking about multifamily real estate a bit differently. Wouldn't you say, Dan?
I agree. You know, there's Houston is a place to observe that too, because it's a
isn't it?
Changing area, you know, as far as the multifamily is concerned. we've seen some old stuff come down, the new come up. I mean, it's just almost immediate, it seems
it's,
like.
It's like the best version of Monopoly you could ever hope to see real time, right before your eyes. And, you know, you look at the number of syndicators. In fact, we're going to be talking about one here in a bit that's based out of Manhattan, and he's not the only one that focuses in part on Houston or Dallas, especially Texas, for their projects. I mean, it's like one of the most prolific markets in America for apartments. And we're very fortunate. We've got, you know, a lot of activity, a lot of transactions in the Houston market. And it doesn't appear that that's going, you know, anywhere south, I guess, fast. I mean, it's still significant demand. There's some new build activity coming online, and it's again, we're spoiled in the Houston market, wouldn't you say, Dan? I mean, that's the only other way to say it.
Yes, that's true. Just in all areas of Houston, it's on the east side, west side, north side, south side, it's everywhere. Yeah, it goes back to that sub-market they're talking about in some of these articles we read or look at. Houston has a great sub-market. I mean, it's a great city anyway, but it's got a lot of things that make it happen. Fortunately, you know, back in the earlier times, we had the oil patch was a big thing, and it still is very important to Houston. But, you know, it's not just oil anymore. There's all kinds of industry here that, yeah, it may feed the oil patch, but it's still it's separate and apart. It can be. We've got clients that are talking now about, you know, how good their year is going. It's just amazing to me to hear people talk good in the sub-market. And things are just, you know, they're vibrant here. And that probably, I would think, would be even extended to Texas because, you know, these guys operate, many of our people operate not just in Houston, but throughout Texas. It's just amazing to me how good things are.
That's a good point. And you know, I would suggest some other areas of Texas perhaps are even better. I mean, you look at all the multifamily projects that are available in Dallas right now, or
Dallas,
DFW,
Austin,
I should say.
San Antonio.
Yeah, Austin. A lot of new build in Austin, as you might expect. Of course, the prices per unit go way up, but so do the rents. And,
yeah.
You know, again, understanding the math is key to, you know, assessing whether you may want to invest in any given transaction. And I'm going to tell you there's more than three, but we're going to talk about the three main criteria that we look at and trying to help you understand the importance of understanding, quote, what you're signing up for, end quote, because, you know, there's transactions. In fact, I'm looking at a transaction right now that has a five-year payout, no money until the fifth year. And you would say, well, you know, that's not good for somebody that needs money next month or let's say in 6 months to start paying for their retirement expenses, cost of living. And that's a true statement. So you, as an investor, you would not be interested in that type of investment. On the other hand, if you're an investor that's still working for the next 5, 6, 7 years, don't really need the monthly cash flow or quarterly cash flow or however it's being distributed on that deal, you might be quite happy to wait till the fifth year to achieve the projected or the targeted almost 4x equity multiple, 3.91. That's off the charts. Correct, Dan? I mean, so that wait may have a payoff that, conversely, if you take your cash flow now, may not be as much. So there's trade-offs.
Yeah, that's good for that 40-year-old, but not so good for that 70-year-old, is it?
Well, that's true. And so, you know, the metrics, the math metrics of what you're signing up for are absolutely critical that you understand some of the math.
Read the rest,
and the fees.
Read the memorandum. Read the PPM.
Well, that's right. And, you know, I hear on the radio recently the founder of one of the old school membership-based platforms here in Houston made the comment that, you know, you don't need to understand the PPMs or the operating agreements. Why are you fearful? Just move forward and invest your money. And it's like, I'm going to give you an example here momentarily of why it's not that you're fearful, it's that you're studious and that you care, excuse me, about providing for your family and providing for the best possible outcome on any given use of the family's capital. And I'll read you part of a offering memorandum. It involves a Houston project. It's a big-time operator. And it'll just illustrate to you why that attitude of sticking your head in the sand, that's just egregious advice to be coming from someone that's supposed to be your mentor and has what I would argue is a fiduciary obligation, somebody you've paid a lot of money to advise you what the metrics are, the math metrics on a given deal, and make sure you understand them before you invest your money. You may still want to invest your money. That's not the issue. The issue is every transaction, literally every transaction that we've ever looked at has nuances and has differences, much as we're getting ready to explain on this one transaction that might do more than put fear into your analysis. It'll probably make you turn and walk away once you realize just how little. I mean, we all know we've got certain risk involving, well, life in general, much less investing your money and much less investing your money in real estate private partnerships. You know, we tend to think that those transactions, the right ones, have less risk than many other options in life combined with higher returns. But in any event, so the three areas that you really want to understand is what's the hold time? How long is it going to be before this lead partner or sponsor or syndicator? And by the way, there may be a combination. There may be multiple sponsors or multiple lead partners. You need to understand, you know, who is driving the wagon. You know, when the bullets start flying, who's the one that's going to give the command to either advance or retreat, I guess you might say. And so anyway, we see most transactions that we have come across our collective desk will have, I don't know, what do you think, Dan, 5-year average hold time would be typical?
Yes, that's a typical hold time. That's a good projection hold time because it allows for some appreciation, not only from our value add efforts possibly, but also for inflation to add some value. You know, it's just, we know it's going to happen. Historically, right. It has around 2%. It will happen. We know that 5 years is a time that you could still get a college degree. It's a long time, but not a
well.
As
one of my clients mentioned just in passing, I think it was a joke when we were talking about this concept. She said, 5 years, I could have 6 kids in 5 years, and that's actually possible if you do the math. That is actually a true statement. Delivery being the key thing, I guess, And like you say, you could start and complete a college degree. You could binge watch. These are some of the other comments I've jotted down over time. 5 seasons of your favorite Netflix show. But you get the point. 5 years is a long enough time for a lot of things to materialize. And did you, I was thinking here while you were talking, Dan, did you mention the ability to refinance that typically would occur within that 5-year period, if not sell?
Yeah, typical start out hold time might be 3 to 5 years. So within that 5 years, we want to maybe get a refinance, get our money back.
Well, that's right. Hopefully we've completed the rehab. If it's a value add scenario where we're adding maybe updated appliances and, you know, the dog park or the bark park, I guess they call it these days, or, you know, some covered parking or private garages. It gives you the chance to apply your value add strategies, and you've got enough turnover that happens in that period where you've got new leases, new tenants, and theoretically developed. I'm sorry, say again.
Vacancy has decreased. We're doing better. That's, so we got higher.
That's
complexion.
That's correct, and it's given you the ability to have the story, to go to the lender, the lending community, and say, okay, you know, now we're ready, and theoretically get a better deal. So we finished one of the three items. Let's take a break. We'll go ahead and take a few minutes here. We'll be right back with more of the Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show, and we will pick up with criteria numbers 2 and 3 when we return.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make it.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
The Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, focuses exclusively on helping investors understand the current options for investing. The syndication arena has changed. You can now take advantage of direct online investing options without expensive upfront membership fees. Nathan Ross, CPA, discusses these options and more, including the math involved with partnership selection, reporting, and performance. On the Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, Sundays at 7 a.m. right here on KSEV.
The song, Bobby McGee, I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and fake dreams. And there are many just like me with big dreams and fake dreams.
Okay, welcome back to more of the Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show with Nathan Ross and this week's guest, as usual, Dan DuBose, CPA. And Dan, we had just finished, we started discussing three of the metrics that are three of our favorites to look at. We've got others, but just at a high level, this helps people weed through maybe a stack of 4 or 5 private placement memorandums or options for investing in assorted transactions. The second one is the projected cash on cash return. And this might be fairly obvious, but again, there's some nuances here that go into that calculation. And then there's also, I guess, the overriding concern or prospect of how often do the cash contributions get distributed, because I just mentioned I've got a transaction I'm looking at that has a 5-year target for the hold, and it's also the 5th year that they make the entirety of the distribution that they target to the passive investor. And in the meantime, there's a lot of other people getting paid, but it's not the passive investor that's part of the syndication. There's some private equity that's involved. Obviously, the team, the management team, is getting assorted fees out. And so, you know, all that has to be considered. And, you know, it's one thing for us to be critical about the fees. It's quite another if it's with a group that has gotten to the finish line repeatedly and delivered on the projected math that they told investors going in. And so, you know, I want to distinguish, there's a big difference between somebody that's done it versus somebody that hadn't. It's kind of like the old Saint, back in the day, the St. Louis Cardinals had a pitcher that was quite outstanding. You remember Dizzy Dean, Dan, or at least the name?
The name, for sure, yes. Never saw
him. Yeah, and Yeah, I think he was the origin of this statement. There's been many other people that have mentioned it, but, you know, he said, if you can do it, it ain't bragging, to quote him specifically. And so, you know, what we would like to avoid is somebody making a target projection that doesn't even come close because they've never been to the finish line. They don't know where the finish line is. And, boy, is that common in this syndication space. And so I'm going to urge you to always seek to align your interest as a passive with those of the team. And if there's talk about the team taking assorted compensation pieces out at assorted points in time, try to figure out how much you're getting at each of those points. And of course, I'm going to tell you, in most cases, you won't be getting much of anything until you get towards the end. But you know, at least if they tell you that and they've executed that model before, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But it's certainly worth delving into, along with a myriad of other collateral issues that when you take them all together, you're trying to figure out, well, how reasonable, how rational is this? And it may be like one we'll talk about here momentarily, where I would say thanks, but no thanks. And they are a proven syndicator, but I don't like the position of being, I don't know what a good word is, Dan, handcuffed or tied down, or I'm trying to think of the other ways to, explain the fact that you've got no leverage, in a transaction. Say again, illiquid. Yeah, well, that's true of all these investments, and that's actually a positive thing when it comes to calculating Roth conversion tax basis, right? We like the fact that we don't have liquidity. That's part of what helps us do a Roth conversion at, you know, half or more discounts that get us a very low or much lower tax cost to do the Roth conversion as it would if it were sitting in stock market, highly liquid investments, which have a lot of the same risk, by the way, as these real estate transactions do. So, Dan, what do we, you know, I know in the past, 6 to 8% per year, even higher. I've seen some deals in the last 6 months, I guess, that had 10% projected cash on cash. And let's distinguish when we talk about cash flow or cash on cash returns, we're talking about what's left after you factor in vacancy costs. We're talking theoretically about annual, but you know, cash flow could be 5 years. I mean, it just depends on how it's defined. But we prefer to see, you know, somewhere in the 6 to 8% each year, knowing that right now there's a lot of 4 to 5% rates that are being paid. And so you know, that core metric is critical for those that need the money near term to live on, whether this is being paid to you in your, you know, a realm as a, just an individual investor, you didn't use retirement money, it's just coming directly to you, or whether it's going into your 401 trust or your self-directed IRA, and then you're turning around and taking distributions that'll be subject to tax and or penalty if you're under the age of 59 and a half. But Dan, what do you think in today's market is realistically for someone that's picking up a deal as we speak or looking to pick one up?
You know, if you could get a 6% cash on cash, that's much akin to, you know, just an interest rate compared to, you know, now you might be able to get 2 or 3% on a high yielding, let's call that in quote high yielding interest account. You know, Treasury bonds are trading right now around 3%. So you get a 6%, you're doubling even that. You're in much higher risk. Yes, you are, but you're getting a decent, very good, I think, at 6% cash flow. Now, that's just the cash flow. That's not counting the profit. That's the potential that's at the end of the deal. That's just on your monthly or quarterly or annual amount you're going to get. Well, and you got, you know, you, sometimes you're going to need that cash flow. Some people might be living on that cash flow, paying their rent, paying their car note, buying their groceries. Particularly, you get into even a self-directed 401 trust when you're getting a little older when you got to start taking those required minimum distributions. If you're not in a Roth, you're going to need that cash flow to get your money out.
Right. That's a good point. I was remiss in not reminding folks of that when I was saying, well, you may need to start paying your living expenses in retirement. Well, you're going to need to think about that RMD in that context. And in most of our clients' cases, the RMD will provide more than enough for living, you know, as you get older, because as that numerator goes down on that calculation, boy, that amount of money you need to pull out can go fairly high. And, you know, we do have RMDs on the 401, Dan, on the 401 Roth, while we don't on the Roth IRA. However, you don't have to start your RMDs on the 401, provided you're still self-employed with that side gig income, whatever that might be, which, so, you know, that gives you an out on that. But just to be clear, once you've, quote, retired without any side gig income, then you're going to have to deal with that. And, of course, we can do a rollover from the Roth 401 out to the Roth IRA, but there's a whole myriad of other issues on that front that we'd have to contend with. So that's why we look at these decision points very carefully to make sure we're not stepping out of one potential issue into a second. Like the Roth IRA, if you're going to continue to invest in real estate private partnerships, you're going to have that are leveraged, you're going to have the UDFI to contend with, you know, the tax that we talk about, that extra layer. So in any event, okay, well, Dan, what is the third criteria that we are always assessing?
The profit at the end?
Well, the profit at the end, and you know, I didn't want to overlook refinance. I'm going to say profit with refinances. It may not be profit. It's you know, re-leveraging the asset, but you know, I hesitate to use the word profit because, you know, cash flow is very valuable, whether it's profit or whether it's simply rents over expenses, right? So, in any event, but you're right. And typically, we're looking at, I don't know, 40 to 60%, depending on what's happened up until that point, whether we've done a refinance. Obviously, the equity multiple is the variable that we're directly focusing on here. We're trying to figure out how much cash did we get out on, let's say, a $100,000 investment. And the sale is typically one of the bigger pieces of that. But, you know, it could be a refinance, Dan. I mean, I've seen refinances where people got 100% of their initial investment back. But then, of course, at the end, on the exit, if you're talking about a 5 or 6, maybe 7 year, you may not get another 100%, but you could get 30 to 40. I mean, I've seen that happen. So bottom line is we're trying to ascertain what's the total cash distributions that we've seen come out, including the return of our original capital. And that's where we're seeking that magical 0.0463 per month. If we're going to average a 20% level, I call it compounded ROI, which is what we use when we prepare the 401 math illustration that we show you, you know, how fast your money grows. We refer to the rule of 72. And as you may recall, Dan, at a compounded 20% ROI, your money should double. At a 20% compounded level ROI, your money should double every 3.6 years, which is 43.2 months, which gives us 0.0463 when we divide that in, that 43.2 months, into a 2.0. So that's our gold standard. And, you know, it's going to deviate if the transaction goes longer to get you your money out, It's also, I think, directly related. Something we're seeing a lot of now is lower equity multiples. And people say, well, gee, why are they going down? Well, that's what happens when you've got lower loan-to-value terms on mortgages. You know, when instead of getting 75 to 80% of your capital, a lender is only willing to do, what, Dan, 65 is kind of common, I think we said earlier, 65%.
Yeah, 65 LTVs. Would be a really, really good one, I think, nowadays.
And instead of high 3.x interest rates, you're seeing, what, as high as 6, I think, now? We're seeing targeted? Yeah, 5, upper 5s is common. I don't know if that's going to subside anytime in the future. When you see the Fed teed up to do 0.75% raises increase of the Fed fund rate, I mean, for as far as the eye can see is what it looks like. Certainly nobody's willing to put a timeline on when they won't have to do that, right? In any event, those the impact of LTV and interest rate is something that we would like to have our hands on the sensitivity analysis. I haven't come up with it yet. We're looking to track it a bit before we make a rule of thumb determination, but there's no question it has a huge impact on this issue. Let's take one last break here, Dan, and then we'll come back in a few minutes, and I want to talk about some of the language in one of the current PPMs is just an example of perhaps a fox that's trying to raid your hen house. We'll be right back momentarily.
With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little more giving.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com or tune in each Saturday at 5 p.m. for the Be a Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross right here on AM 700 KSEV.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment this week of the Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show. And Dan, we're going to pivot over to talking about a provision that I saw in the PPM we were looking at, one of the PPMs we were looking at this week, regarding side letters. Do you want to read that provision? Do you have that handy? Are you there? Hello, Dan?
Yeah, you went dead for a while for some reason.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, maybe I had a connection drop from over here. Do you want to read that side letter provision that we reached down into the guts of that PPM to pull out? You have that handy? Or?
Yeah.
Okay, I can read it.
I've got it.
Yeah.
I can read it. You can read it verbatim. I think I need to.
Yeah, read it verbatim just so we can really get the gist. I mean, it's rather remarkable, I would say, but let's go ahead.
We as you said, this minutes. Is down in the guts of a PPM, a private placement memorandum. It says the fund, the general partner, or the manager, without any further approval of any person, may enter into side letters to or with one or more investors that have the effect of establishing rights under or altering or supplementing the terms of the fund agreement. Such side letters may provide for, among other things, certain veto or consent rights on major decisions to anchor investors. Any rights established under or any terms of the fund agreement altered or supplemented in a side letter with an investor shall govern with respect to such investor, notwithstanding any other provision of the fund agreement. In addition, the general partner reserves the right to waive all or any portion of any contribution interest, acquisition fee, or asset management fee attributable to any investor in the general partner's sole and absolute discretion.
Okay. Thanks for reading that. That came from page 34 and 35. As we said, deep in the bowels, if you will, of this private placement memorandum. That is, I mean, it's not necessarily surprising, but it certainly bears worth noting the types of things that when you do is what I heard on the radio, the head of one of the wealth creation, supposedly, I might call it the anti-wealth creation platform in Houston, suggested you do when you're investing with syndicators, I guess referring to the ones that invest on his platform, which, by the way, you don't need to join that platform to invest with those syndicators. You can invest directly with every syndicator that you may see present at that particular platform. So there's not much value add, if any, to spending your $20,000 to $25,000 to join that group. But bottom line is, when you don't read, you don't learn. And when you don't learn, you're going to look around as you get down the road and wonder where your money went and why you're not getting the returns that you didn't even know were being proposed. And how would you like to find out here that they've effectively diluted your interest, which I think they'd be careful about things like that. But whether it's direct or indirect, this kind of nonsense is something that at a minimum should be subject to a vote of the affected parties. And I'm going to tell you, this is only the second. I've got two, my favorites of all time. This has made that list now. This will be the second. The first one was a deal we looked at about a year ago, and unfortunately, I think this is probably implicit in many of these agreements, but this syndicator, so much as said it. And I guess I used to say, hey, go do a search in the document. If you've got a search function of your PDF program you're reading it on, for, quote, sole discretion, end quote, and see how many times that pops up. Now, in this case, you would have missed this provision. It's interesting how this syndicator worded it to not, you know, include, it just says without any further approval. Well, you know, that's not going to show up, obviously, if you're searching for the words sole discretion. Sole discretion will get you a lot of the egregious language. But in any event, on my number one all-time favorite, it gave the syndicator, the lead partner, the ability to raise his and the team's compensation for any reason, at any point in time that he decided to, without vote, without approval or acquiescence by the investors. Unbelievable that that would be allowed in a normal, you know, 200-250-unit apartment transaction that's targeted over, you know, 4 or 5 years. And I would just tell you, you know, if you don't have the ability with the cadre of fees that's being taken to afford your overhead, you're in the wrong business, you know, when it comes to these types of transactions. But in any event, Dan, there's some other language in this. Might as well discuss, once we got a couple minutes here, in this particular investment memorandum or PPM. the one that I mean, it's like we know this stuff happens. It's almost funny that they pointed out under conflicts of interest, the fund on the one hand and the general partner, the manager, and their affiliates collectively, I'm not going to mention the name, but it's got a unique name identifier, the parties, let's say, on the other, are subject to a number of actual and potential conflicts of interest. Boy, I'll say, when you read what Dan just read, the conflicts of interest identified in this memorandum do not purport to be exhaustive. In other words, there may be more than what we've already identified. And the fund and the blank parties may become subject to conflicts of interest in the future that are not contemplated by the memorandum. I don't know what else could come up. They've covered pretty much everything. They've given themselves wide latitude here. But any event, they also talk about amendments. The fund agreement may generally be amended by the written consent of the general partner and a vote by the investors representing at least 50% in interest of the aggregate capital contributions to the fund. So they've covered themselves there because they require the consent of the general partner. So even if they only had, or let's say they had 80% of the other investors, they'd still be able to block it. And, you know, when you look at the various terms and conditions here, if you don't get a cold fuzzy, not a warm fuzzy, I don't know what, you know, you expect out of your investment capital and its future. But I only raise this point because, again, on the one hand, you see people that should have your best interest at heart that indeed are willing to look the other way when it comes to transactions that may be coming across their specific platform, if not others. And I don't know. It's not in my mind. It's no way to run an investment. And we'll call it out every time we see it if it matters to our clients, which, trust me, this kind of structure and this kind of math is not something that would be well received. Well, Dan, once again, we are at the end of the show, the part we've all been waiting for, as Rod Stewart used to say in many of his performances. And we've enjoyed this week again. We hope we've enlightened a bit. Perhaps entertained a bit, but in any event, we will be back this coming Saturday for the BA Planner Tax Smash Show. And I'm going to tease a little that I think we'll get into some tax planning, asset protective entity strategies that we've been working on. And if not this week or coming week, certainly next. But in any event, we hope you can tune in next Saturday. If not, we'll look forward to the next time. Thanks for being on the call today, Dan.
Thank you, Nathan. Have a good week.
Okay, you bet.
Thanks for listening to Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 5 for another edition of Be a Planner Show here on AM 700 KSEV.